Macron speaks for all of Europe and stated that if Europe is not going to pick sides over the Taiwan question, the United States will focus on the threats that China poses, and you guys handle Ukraine and Europe. Marco Rubio also demanded that France or Europe provide an answer quickly. These blatant statements cannot be called criticism or opposition anymore, but are Washington's completely undisguised bullying and coercion. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. Emmanuel Macron has flown into a storm of criticism after he said Europe should not become a vassal and must avoid being drawn into any conflict between the United States and China over Taiwan. The French president made the remarks in an interview on his plane after a three-day state visit to China, where he received a red carpet welcome by China's President Xi Jinping, a show of pageantry that alarmed some European China watchers. Speaking to reporters from Les Echos and Politico, Emmanuel Macron said Europe should be a third power in the world order, along with the United States and China. While the comments reaffirmed Macron's long-term goal of strategic autonomy for Europe, namely avoiding military and economic dependencies, his remarks on Taiwan stoked anger and alarm on both sides of the Atlantic. According to Les Echos, Macron said, "Do Europeans have an interest in speeding up on the subject of Taiwan? No. The worst of things would be to think that we Europeans must be followers on this subject and adapt ourselves to an American rhythm and a Chinese overreaction." Emmanuel Macron added, "It would be a trap for Europe, now it had developed more autonomy since the COVID pandemic, to get caught up in crises that are not ours. If there was an acceleration of conflict between the American and Chinese duopoly, we will not have the time nor the means to finance our own strategic autonomy, and we will become vassals, whereas we could become the third pole in the world order if we have a few more years to develop this." Emmanuel Macron said the need for Europe's strategic autonomy was now widely accepted, and there had never been such an acceleration of European power as in recent years. He also emphasized the risk to Europe of the US Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA, a $369 billion green subsidy plan and overdependence on the dollar. However, he said, Europe had reacted with great speed to come up with our European Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA, referring to plans to boost homegrown green technology and the production of critical raw materials. And Macron suggested the talks with Xi Jinping had been useful in confronting complacency on the part of China with regards to Russia. The goal of the dialogue with China was to consolidate common approaches over the war in Ukraine, Macron said. According to the website Politico, the Élysée Presidential Palace checked Macron's quotes before publication as a condition of granting the interview and insisted on the removal of lines where Macron had spoken even more frankly about Taiwan and Europe's strategic autonomy. In a social media post linking to the Politico interview, the US Republican Senator Marco Rubio said if Emmanuel Macron spoke for all of Europe, then the United States should consider focusing its foreign policy on containing China and leave the Europeans to handle the war in Ukraine. Marco Rubio, who lost the Republican presidential nomination to Donald Trump in 2016, said he supported US aid for Ukraine, but if Europe was going to pick sides over Taiwan, a rethink was in order. The Indian news website First Post has also covered this story and tells us more. The White House on Monday said it remains confident in the US-French relationship after French President Emmanuel Macron distanced himself from United States policy on Taiwan and warned Europeans not to be American followers. Emmanuel Macron's remarks to journalists from French business daily Les Echos and news site Politico came after he was hosted for a state visit by China's Xi Jinping. White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said the Biden administration remains comfortable and confident in the terrific bilateral relationship we have with France. Spokesman John Kirby cited President Joe Biden's personal relationship with Emmanuel Macron and said the two countries are working together on so many different issues, including naval operations in the Asia-Pacific. Washington and Paris are partners in a concerted effort by all of us in this vast alliance, this network of alliances and partnerships, John Kirby said. In his interview, Emmanuel Macron said European countries, among the closest allies of the United States, should not get caught in the tense standoff between Beijing and Washington over the fate of Taiwan. China has vowed to regain control of Taiwan, while the US government has pledged to help Taiwan defend itself. French President Emmanuel Macron, who discussed Taiwan with Chinese President Xi Jinping on Friday, 7th of April, warned against Europe being caught up in crises that are not ours, which prevents it from building its strategic autonomy.
Lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Palestinians will always remember May 15, 1948, which is referred to as Nakba Day, or Day of Misery. That day, David Ben-Gurion, the head of the Jewish Agency, proclaimed the establishment of the State of Israel. While the founders of Israel had envisioned a utopia for Israeli settlers, now after 75 years, international observers indicate that it has brought no freedom or justice to anyone except for some Zionist Jews. Beginning in 1948, the crimes of violent displacement and ethnic cleansing were perpetrated against Palestinians by Zionist paramilitary organizations that forced hundreds of thousands to flee their homes and lands. This ongoing crime undermines the very foundations of the international system established after World War II to maintain international peace and security, including the prohibition of forcible seizure of land and displacement of indigenous people and people's rights to self-determination. Britain, as the godfather of Israel, played a significant role in its formation, and today the United States continues the British ways by providing annual financial and military support to complete the Zionist regime project. Every year, Iranians, along with other people across the world, mark the International Quds Day, which falls on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan, to reiterate their call for the liberation of Palestine. The Quds Day is a unique portrayal of unity and resistance among Muslims and all the freedom seekers of the world to condemn the atrocities and occupation of the Zionist regime, which has become the prime element of insecurity and instability in the West Asia region since 1948. To take a closer look at the annual Quds Day, please join us on this edition of Iran Today. The International Quds Day is a legacy of the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who designated the day in solidarity with Palestinians. The International Quds Day has been held worldwide since the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran. Ayatollah Khomeini viewed opposition towards Israel and Zionism as a cornerstone of the revolution's achievements, so much so that it became an inseparable element of the Islamic Republic's identity. It all started on June 3, 1963, when Ayatollah Khomeini delivered a speech against the Shah and Israel and was subsequently arrested and imprisoned. This started an underground political movement in opposition to the Shah's regime and also reflected opposition to the bilateral relationship that had developed between Iran and Israel. It therefore served as a ground for cooperation with Palestinian resistance organizations.
The nation-state is a model that was created in the West and spread all over the world. All political systems in the world have been formed within the framework of this international law. But because of its religious nature, Iran's Islamic Revolution was formed based on two models. One is nation-state and the other, Ummah state. Based on this point of view, an Iranian, as a citizen of Iran, feels that he is Iranian, but at the same time, he cannot ignore his religious beliefs and he feels brotherhood with Muslims around the world. Based on the Quran, which says that Muslim believers are brothers, he feels solidarity with a Palestinian who lives on the other side of the borders of his country. They are considered one community.
Subsequently, in the 1970s, before the victory of the Iranian Revolution, there was a significant development in cooperation and training between the Iranian guerrilla movements, Palestinian resistance organizations, and Shia factions in southern Lebanon. And after the revolution, the Palestinian cause became a central theme in Ayatollah Khomeini's preaching. He based his speeches on Shia concepts of the distinction between oppressor and oppressed and the principle of helping the weak. This meant focusing anew on Islamic activism on behalf of the cause of Palestine.
Firstly, Iran deals with the Palestinians based on the fact that Palestine belongs to them and is their indisputable right, and that there is no whatsoever right for the Zionists, who must be punished for their crimes over the past years. Imam Khomeini dubbed this Zionist entity as a cancerous tumor planted at the heart of the Islamic Ummah by force, so it must be removed. This is the official stance of the Islamic Republic of Iran. All its policies are being based on this idea. Of course, there are many aids given to the Palestinians from political, morale, material, and military aspects, but the Islamic Republic of Iran has been the only side that never stopped its support to the resistance in Palestine.
As a result, in August 1979, he declared the last Friday of the month of Ramadan International Quds Day. After Imam Khomeini's death in June 1989, the Iranian establishment maintained his legacy faithfully in order to prove its loyalty to his path and to the revolutionary movement he had established.
The Palestinian nation used to have a leftist view. They had no hope for victory. They often carried out short and quick attacks with the aim of causing small damages and gaining short financial benefits. But today, after the Islamic Revolution of Iran and the establishment of Quds Day, the Palestinian society believes that resistance against Israel and defeating it is a divine duty and has moved towards fulfilling this responsibility. Therefore, we see that the achievements of the Palestinians are expanding every day. The exit from Gaza after 38 years was the result of the resistance strike. And the exit from southern Lebanon was due to the resistance strike as well, and many other achievements. Today, the Palestinian community has found its way.
The political hierarchy in Iran, led by the Islamic Revolution's leader Ayatollah Khamenei, also believes that loyalty to the legacy of the Islamic Republic's founder will consolidate the country's power and influence both at home and abroad. As a result, faithfulness to the Palestinian struggle and resistance has been vigilantly maintained. The Islamic Republic of Iran has proposed a logical and feasible solution to the Palestinian situation that includes holding a referendum with all the original and historic inhabitants of the occupied territories, both those who are still there and those who have been displaced, including Muslims, Christians, Jews, and their descendants. In this way, they can decide on the future of the country together, a decision that will be adaptable to everyone. This initiative, entitled National Referendum in Palestine, has been presented to the United Nations by Tehran.
The Zionist regime never accepts the offer of a referendum because it knows very well that the Palestinian community has 15 million people and only half of this population is in the occupied territory. Although this half that exists in the occupied land, whether in the occupied part in 1948, the Gaza Strip or the West Bank, is more than the Jewish population. This is not my claim, but the officials of this regime have made this confession.
The implementation of this plan includes four main phases: enforcing the right of Palestinian refugees to return to their historical homeland, holding a national referendum among the people of Palestine, including the followers of all religions who inhabited Palestine before the issuance of the Balfour Declaration for the self-determination and determination of the political system, establishing the political system determined by the majority of the people of Palestine, deciding on the status of the non-indigenous residents of Palestine by the political system elected by the majority.
The population is the basic pillar of Israel's survival. If the Jewish population in this region decreases and moves towards a minority, it means that Israel will be destroyed. We see that in recent years, reverse migration has greatly expanded, which has several reasons. One reason is that because of the discrimination that exists in the system of the Zionist regime against other Jewish minority.
In this regard, Ismail Haniyeh, the chief of the Political Bureau of Islamic Resistance Movement, Hamas, lauded the Islamic Republic for supporting Palestine, expressing his appreciation for stances adopted by the Islamic Republic and Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei in support of the Palestinian nation. Underlining that victory belongs to the Palestinian people, Haniyeh has expressed hope that the holy city of Al-Quds would be liberated in the near future, and the Iranians and Palestinians would say prayers together in the holy city.
We are witnessing a wave of sanctions against the Zionist regime. BDS, for example, which is a Palestinian-led movement promoting boycotts, divestments, and economic sanctions against Israel, and is expanding, and it has surpassed the limited economic sphere and entered the cultural and educational areas. The Zionist regime considers this movement a serious threat to itself and spends more than $20 million annually to fight it. In addition, we see that the United Nations has passed many resolutions in the past few years in favor of Palestine and to the detriment of the Zionist regime. If we put all these small pieces together and analyze them, we will realize that today the Zionist regime is in a political isolation in the world.
Furthermore, a representative of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement in Tehran, Nasser Abu Sharif, in an interview with the local media stated, "The International Quds Day is the day of taking giant strides on the right path. The right path is moving towards Quds. Imam Khomeini's correct understanding of the religion as well as the contemporary situation caused him to initiate the Quds Day."
No, of course, in light of the current international equation that formed the Zionist entity and still depends on it as an advanced base, it's not possible to find a solution, whatever solution could be. We saw Oslo agreements in the year 1993 and their outcomes after 30 years. Of course, there haven't been any results except a big decline on the ground. For instance, there have been more and more settlements and confiscations of lands. For all these reasons, there is no hope of a political solution. The only horizon in front of us is resistance, which is the feasible solution.
Meanwhile, Tehran's Jewish community head Homayoun Samieh Najafabadi says, "The more time passes, the more the Israeli regime faces global isolation, contrary to its long-standing wish for a stable position among the world countries. During these years, not only has this regime committed massive massacres and oppression of the Palestinian people, but it also has created insecurity and fomented tensions and conflicts in the West Asia region. Such disturbing behaviors have revealed the vicious nature of the Zionist regime to all freedom seekers in the world and have consequently led to nothing but a global shame for its leaders."
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more right after a quick diversion into world media. Here's how it looks on the page. Times of Israel reads, Iran's leader, Israel's demise coming faster than I expected. Khamenei, referencing 2015 remarks giving Jewish state another 25 years, says internal crisis over judicial overhaul is tearing country apart sooner than he thought. Their own officials continuously warn that their collapse is nearing. Their president says this, their former prime minister says this, their military chief says this, and their defense minister says this. They all say it, Khamenei said, appearing to refer to concerns voiced by public figures such as President Isaac Herzog that civil conflict could break out over intense disagreements on the legislation that seeks to shackle the Supreme Court. Israel was deadlocked politically since elections in 2019. After its fifth election in under 4 years, in November 2022, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu returned to power, with his Likud party and religious and far-right allies winning 64 seats. Tensions peaked as Netanyahu announced he was firing Defense Minister Yoav Gallant for publicly calling for a halt to the legislation due to such concerns. The announcement sparked spontaneous mass protests, which swelled to a strike announcement by the Histadrut Labor Federation, including the grounding of outgoing flights from Ben-Gurion Airport. According to English Al Arabiya, Saudi Arabia condemns Israeli police attacks on Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan. Saudi Arabia on Wednesday condemned Israeli police's blatant attacks on worshippers inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem during the Islamic holy month of Ramadan. In a statement, the kingdom's Ministry of Foreign Affairs said it is following with great concern the Israeli occupation forces' storming of the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque, assaulting worshippers and arresting a number of Palestinian citizens. Israeli police attacked dozens of worshippers inside the mosque before sunrise on Wednesday, injuring at least seven with rubber-tipped bullets and batons, according to the Palestinian Red Crescent. Israeli forces prevented medics from reaching the wounded inside the mosque, the Red Crescent added. Videos circulating on social media showed Israeli police beating worshippers inside the mosque, as well as destroyed and damaged property inside the Al-Aqsa. Israel holds over 5,000 Palestinians as political prisoners. Political repression is central to Israel's military occupation. It includes arbitrary arrests and imprisonment. Hundreds of Palestinians are held by Israeli in the so-called administrative detention, imprisoned indefinitely without charges or trial, not even allowed to see the evidence allegedly held against them. Israel's treatment of prisoners systematically violates international law. Torture is normal in interrogation and detention. Prisoners are kept in inhumane conditions. They are often denied medical care, visitors, and access to education. Reportedly, every Palestinian family has been touched by the injustice of arbitrary detention.
The West believes that this region should not develop and make progress at all, and therefore it should always be involved in wars, riots, clashes, and such problems. For this reason, Israel's presence in this region is considered a necessity to create these tensions.
Moreover, on February 27, Israeli settlers carried out one of the largest organized attacks on Palestinians in years. At least 400 settlers descended onto Huwara, where they torched more than 30 Palestinian homes and 100 cars, killed a Palestinian man, and injured hundreds of others. Huwara is a Palestinian town located on the main road connecting Nablus southwards to Ramallah and Jerusalem. The far-right Israeli government that came into power at the end of 2022 has increased illegal Jewish settlements across the occupied West Bank, increased demolitions of Palestinian homes, and vowed to move forward with plans to forcibly displace thousands more Palestinians.
The fact that the West decided to create a fake regime in the Middle East due to its colonial approach and its political needs, there is no guarantee that this process will succeed. Why? Their idea was that they would gather people from more than 80 countries in one region, name it Israel, teach them Yiddish language, and create a fake history for them so that they could create a sense of unity amongst them. The West did its best and created kind of a united nation and identity, but this feeling of unity was not created. The Ukrainian war indicated that their assumption was wrong, as the Russian and Ukrainian Jews clashed in Israel with the outbreak of the war.
About 700,000 Israelis live in over 230 illegal settlements built in the West Bank and East Jerusalem Al-Quds. The international community views the settlements as illegal under international law, but has done little to pressure the Israeli regime to freeze or reverse its policies. Human Rights Watch has concluded that Israel is committing the crimes against humanity of apartheid and persecution against Palestinians, and said it has forwarded its findings to the International Criminal Court for due action.
This regime is a threat to the region and the world. Since the announcement of the existence of this regime in 1948, they have always been busy creating tension and war. The fake Zionist regime in 1948, 1956, 67, 73, and 82 has always been waging wars and killing men, women, and children. Today, we see that there is a war going on inside Israel with the Palestinians. Such a government in such a situation cannot be sustainable. This is why many scientists and experts raise doubts about the future of Israel and the possibility of this regime's survival.
In a 213-page release report, the New York-based human rights group said the Israeli regime was the single authority with primary control over the area between the Jordan River and Mediterranean Sea, and it is methodologically privileging Jewish Israelis while repressing Palestinians most severely in the occupied territory.
The Western world, or the world itself in general, is conspiring with the Zionist entity completely. The states that created the Zionist entity in our region are Britain, France, and other European states, because the creation of it was a Western project in principle. So how are you going to ask the above-mentioned European states to deal with this problem? Later, the U.S. government took the responsibility of supporting the Zionist entity with all its means and tools, so today, American policies in the region are supporting this entity.
The Gaza Strip, home to more than 2 million people, has been under an Israeli-imposed sea, land, and air blockade for the past 16 years. It has been dubbed as the world's largest open-air prison, with Palestinians needing Israeli army permits to enter and exit the Strip. Some 80% of the Strip's population are dependent on humanitarian assistance, with residents enduring the regular power outages and high unemployment. Meanwhile, massive crowds filled the streets of the Israeli city of Tel Aviv a few days ago after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu fired his Minister of Military Affairs over his opposition to a planned judicial overhaul. Critics say Netanyahu is pushing through the changes because of his own ongoing corruption trial. Netanyahu denies this. The current Israeli Prime Minister faces numerous charges of corruption and abuse of power, and his case is still open.
Israel is under pressure, both from the outside and from the inside, and we can see that with the new government taking office, protests against its extremely biased behavior have increased in the Zionist society, and the society has practically become polarized. The supporters of Netanyahu, or the extremists and the so-called liberals, considering the ongoing street demonstrations and protests, which are intensifying, and the fact that about 2,800,000 people from this community have weapons, if these conflicts spread, the issue of civil war is not far from the mind.
Netanyahu's recent trials triggered 4 years of political crisis in which Israel was split over whether he was fit for leadership. After five elections since 2019, in which politicians on both sides failed to form stable governments, a bloc of extremists and religious parties headed by Netanyahu's Likud won a clear majority in elections last November and went on to form the most right-wing administration in Israeli history. Full annexation of the occupied West Bank, axing laws protecting women's rights and minority rights, make up some of the coalition's agenda. Worries that the proposals will result in an erosion of the rule of law have sparked the biggest protest movements in Israeli history, with hundreds of thousands of people taking to the streets in various cities, demonstrations held outside the Knesset in Jerusalem, and several days of disruption, in which protesters have blocked highways and Tel Aviv airport. The movement is significant, and unexpected pressure is coming from military reservists and Israel's vitally important tech sector. Internationally, many of Israel's allies have expressed alarm over the direction in which the regime is heading.
A professor who happens to be a Jew and a Zionist at Tel Aviv University, named Dr. Sant, has written a book called The Invention of the Jewish Nation. He says that we have been exploring under Al-Aqsa Mosque for more than 7 decades now, but we have not discovered anything, not even a single bowl. Many believe that the Jews did not come to Palestine in the history and moved southward from Egypt to the Sinai Peninsula. One of the most important claims of the Israelis is that the Temple of Solomon is located in the same place where the Al-Aqsa Mosque is. But now that they have dug 40 tunnels under this mosque, they have not managed to discover anything. These show that the claims of the Israelis are just a historical lie, and if they withdraw from this claim today, they must withdraw from the entire project of Israel.
Israel accused of imposing apartheid on Palestinians by major human rights organizations, including Amnesty International, receives at least $3.8 billion in U.S. military aid annually. Biden, a self-proclaimed Zionist, has pushed for unconditional U.S. support for Israel throughout his decades-long political career, despite pledging to center human rights in his foreign policy as president. That's all for today. Do tune in same time next week and each week after. Till next time, take care.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Pentagon officials have expressed concern over the recent leak of classified U.S. documents, saying it exposes Washington to serious security risks. Also, Washington's security officials believe the disclosure of leaked Pentagon documents is likely to affect America's national security. We take a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The France 24 France 24 news channel has covered this story and tells us more. The U.S. Defense Department has issued a stern warning about the threat posed to the country's national security as a result of the recent online leak of dozens of highly sensitive documents. Chris Meagher, Assistant to the Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs, made the remarks on Monday, 10th of April, amid an ongoing probe by the US Justice Department into the leak. The leak features photographs of dozens of highly classified military and intelligence documents on the country's national security and its close allies, which have been surfacing on Twitter, Telegram, Discord, and other social media platforms in recent days. The data reportedly includes secret information on the war in Ukraine, as well as sensitive analyses of America's key allies. One such document states that officials with the Israeli regime's spy agency Mossad supported protests against the controversial judicial reform plan, which was proposed by the Israeli regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Although information about the exposure of the data have been surfacing rather recently, some of the documents may have been circulating online for weeks, if not months. Chris Meagher, assistant to U.S. Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs, said the documents circulating online pose a very serious risk to national security and have the potential to spread disinformation. Meagher added, "We're still investigating how this happened, as well as the scope of the issue. There have been steps to take a closer look at how this type of information is distributed and to whom." Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. The data leak has been described as one of the most serious security breaches since more than 700,000 documents, videos and diplomatic cables appeared on the WikiLeaks whistleblower website back in 2013. The White House National Security spokesman John Kirby told journalists that President Joe Biden had been briefed on the leak recently. Spokesman John Kirby added that the U.S. administration is worried that there may be more documents to come. John Kirby said, "We don't know who's responsible for this leak, and we don't know if they have more that they intend to post. Is that a matter of concern for us? You're darn right it is." The fallout from the leak could be significant, even deadly, potentially putting U.S. intelligence sources at risk, while giving the country's rivals valuable information about the United States. Chris Meagher said, "Disclosure of sensitive classified material can have tremendous implications not only for our national security, but could also lead to people losing their lives." He added that a Pentagon team is working to determine if the documents are genuine, noting, however, that images circulating online seem to show sensitive information. He said, "Photographs appear to show documents similar in format to those used to provide daily updates to our senior leaders on Ukraine and Russia-related operations, as well as other intelligence updates," adding that some of them appear to have been altered. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story and gives us more details. American officials are scrambling to pinpoint the source of the latest online leak of highly classified military and intelligence documents, including intelligence about Ukraine's air defenses and the Israeli regime's Mossad spy agency. U.S. officials further state that the span of topics discussed in the leaked files, which address the Ukraine conflict, China, West Asia and Africa, suggests that the breach may have been perpetrated by an American rather than a foreign ally. A former senior Pentagon official, Michael Moroy, emphasized in an interview with Reuters news agency, "The focus now is on this being a U.S. leak, as many of the documents were only in U.S. hands." The Pentagon has referred the case to the Department of Justice, which has opened a criminal investigation into the matter. Two U.S. officials speaking on condition of anonymity said that while there was concern about the leak at the Pentagon and intelligence agencies, the documents showed a snapshot in time from more than a month ago rather than more recent assessments. The two officials said the military and intelligence agencies were looking at their processes for how widely some of the intelligence is shared internally. One of the officials cited in a Reuters report said officials are also looking into the possible motivations a U.S. official or a group of officials would have in leaking such sensitive information. The official said investigators were looking at four or five theories, from a disgruntled employee to an insider threat who actively wanted to undermine U.S. national security interests. U.S. officials also underlined that the investigation is in its early stages, but have already claimed, without evidence, that pro-Russian elements may be behind the leak. This is while a number of Western news outlets claimed that some of the documents addressing battlefield casualty estimates in the Ukraine conflict appeared to have been altered to minimize Russia's losses. One of the documents, dated 23rd of February and marked secret, outlines in detail how Ukraine's S-300 air defense system would be depleted by 2nd of May this year at the current usage rate. Such closely guarded information could be of use to Russian forces, and Kiev declared its president and top security officials met recently to discuss ways to prevent leaks. According to the Reuters news agency, two American officials insisted on Sunday, 9th of April, that they have not ruled out that the documents may have been doctored to mislead investigators as to their origin or to disseminate false information that may harm U.S. security interests. Pentagon also released a statement on Sunday saying it was reviewing the validity of the photographed documents that appear to contain sensitive and highly classified material. Another document marked top secret and from a CIA intelligence update from 1st of March says Mossad spy agency was encouraging protests against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's plans to tighten control on the Supreme Court. The document said the U.S. learned this through signals intelligence, suggesting Washington had been spying on one of its closest allies in West Asia. Another document gave details of internal discussions among senior South Korean officials about U.S. pressure on Seoul to help supply weapons to Ukraine and its policy of not doing so. The office of South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol said on Monday, 10th of April, that fact checks on the documents are a priority and that it would request the United States to take appropriate steps after confirming the details. Some lawmakers in South Korea's main opposition Democratic Party expressed strong regret over the spying allegations, calling them a clear violation of national sovereignty and a major security failure of the Yoon administration. The lawmakers said in a joint statement, "We strongly demand a thorough investigation and urge that similar incidents do not occur again." The Pentagon has not addressed the contents of any specific documents, including the apparent surveillance of America's allies.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم all of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel. Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in Imam Ridha alayhi salam's shrine on the occasion of the beginning of the Iranian New Year 1402, that's March 21st, 2023. When I announced that we need to have an economic resistance, I mentioned that it should be endogenous and extroverted. Being endogenous means that internal abilities, skills and capabilities should be used to help the economy, and being extroverted means we are ready to have economic relations with all countries. We have felt this, that is, the people of Iran have felt it, our youth have felt it, and our officials have felt that they need to depend on their own internal strengths. Therefore, we have many strengths. I mentioned our internal strengths and I also spoke about the progress we have made. These exist and there are many other things which now is not the time to be discussed here. These things are our strengths. They should not be damaged. The Islamic system is the Islamic Republic. Neither the Republic nor the Islamic should be damaged. These are our strengths. In any transformation, these strengths need to be emphasized, they should be increased, the strengths need to be highlighted and expanded. However, there are also weaknesses alongside these. Transformation refers to changing the weaknesses.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I will briefly speak to you about the weaknesses and present two or three points on it. Let's say our country happens to have four or five important weaknesses. At the top of these weaknesses lies the issue of the country's economy. The country's economy is truly one of our weaknesses. Of course, many of the economic policies are the legacy of our predecessors. By predecessors, I mean those who held power before the Islamic Revolution, and some that appeared after the revolution. Some of the existing economic problems and economic infrastructures are related to before the revolution, while others are related to after the revolution. Perhaps it can be said that the most important problem concerning our economy is the issue of governmental management of the economy. In the 1980s, the main thing on our mind was to hand over the keys of the country's economy to the government. This harmed our economy. This issue is related to us. We did it ourselves. Perhaps the most important weakness that is gripping our economy is excessive governmental management. When people are kept away from economic management and economic activities, big works, important companies, and wealth-creating production for the country are left at the disposal of the government and not those active in the economic field. When these things are not available to the people, we are faced then with the same problems that we are witnessing in our economy today.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
Think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Israel and this year's Boots Day. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. The World Boots Day has arrived while the Zionist regime has become much more vulnerable than ever. But the resistance front has become very strong. Before the arrival of the blessed month of Ramadan, it was clear that the crimes of the Zionist occupiers would escalate as the presence of Palestinians at Al-Aqsa Mosque increases in this month as an old tradition. Moreover, the Zionist regime has already been beleaguered with political crisis and is facing the worst security conditions in its life. This has caused the Zionist cabinet to intensify crimes against Palestinians as an escape forward. The usurper forces have attacked the Palestinian worshippers and arrested scores of them at Al-Aqsa Mosque. Scores of others have also been injured. These dastardly moves have caused the Palestinian resistance to fire the Jewish settlements with more than 100 rockets. These surprise attacks caused the criminal regime to target Gaza and southern Lebanon with missiles and bombers. One of the main changes in Palestine is that a new generation of resistance has been formed by the young generation, which contains members from the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and Al-Quds. They believe that operations should be carried out inside Tel Aviv. This generation is seriously opposed to any negotiation with the Zionist regime. Another development is that Israel not only failed to eradicate resistance in the West Bank, it is rather the resistance which has succeeded to impose itself on the Zionist entity. This has somehow bewildered the government of Mahmoud Abbas, who believes in talks with the usurper regime. Noted Arab analyst Abdul Bari Atwan says on this issue, "It is quite clear that the self-rule authority in Palestine is going to disintegrate before the Palestinian security forces, and this authority is no longer able to carry out its mission of suppressing the Intifada and confront the battalions of resistance in Jenin, Nablus, Balta, and elsewhere." As for the Zionist regime itself, Benjamin Netanyahu took power again in December 2022 after 1.5 years. He was forced to form coalition with rightists and extremists. The coalition cabinet has taken very extremist measures for the past 100 years inside the occupied territories and against Palestinians. The Bill of Amendment of the Judicial System will highly weaken the system against the cabinet and the Knesset. The bill has caused an unprecedented 700,000-strong demonstration against the cabinet. Interestingly, hundreds of military have joined the opponents of Netanyahu. Yitzhak Herzog has warned against civil war and disintegration of the regime. Thank you.
The racist and bestial violence against innocent people of Palestine by Netanyahu's cabinet has caused the martyrdom of over 90 people since the beginning of the year. So, the resistance groups have stressed the necessity of due measure against the regime, which intends to attack worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque. The new wave of tension began with the assault of the Zionist forces on Wednesday, April 5th, to the mosque and beating the worshippers there. Thus, scores of rockets were shot from southern Lebanon and Gaza to the occupied territories. However, most observers believe that the Zionist regime is too weak and unbreakable to even dream of any new war with the Palestinian forces. Although, on April 6th, the regime missiled some areas in Gaza and Lebanon. The regime's aircrafts only attacked the targets with guided missiles from far distance. In other words, the equipment of the resistance front has seriously challenged the main capability of the regime to use fighters and helicopters. Ismail Haniyeh, the head of Hamas political bureau, said, "We won't let the Israeli regime put into practice its designs of Judaization of Al-Quds and dividing Al-Aqsa Mosque." In addition to the developments in Palestine and the Israeli cabinet, regional developments are also going through too against what the Zionist regime likes. The so-called Abraham Agreement has almost been forgotten with the racist and extremist measures of Netanyahu. The agreement, which had been signed in 2000, was aimed at developing new relations with Arab countries. But he has not been able even to travel to the countries of signatories. The latest attack on Al-Aqsa also urged some of the Arab officials to speak of the closing of Israel's embassies in their countries. Famous Iraqi figure Muqtada Sadr wrote in a Twitter account, "After demonstrations in some of the Zionist cities against their politicians and policies, the great rogue Benjamin Netanyahu has put his finger on a sensitive point and ignited violence in Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa in a bid to get rid of his opponents. These aggressions should be ended, and the first step is that the Arab and Islamic countries quickly decide to close the embassies of the Zionist regime, and if this measure is not constructive, another serious stance should be adopted." The reverse count for the Zionist regime has begun since years ago, and in near future, the entire Palestine will be liberated. Inshallah.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
A symbol of unity in the Muslim world, Al-Quds is a common heritage for followers of Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. And every year, on the occasion of International Quds Day, this becomes the topic of discussion in conferences that are usually held a day before. This year is no different. Political figures and activists gathered in Imam Rizā's holy shrine to emphasize the same persistent and unchangeable policy of supporting the liberation of Al-Quds and the legitimate resistance of the Palestinian nation.
The freedom of Al-Quds is not just a Palestinian issue. It is an issue for all Muslims and freedom seekers all over the world. It is what we all